So I just wanted to run a quick soundbite here for you. We learned today in the city of Phoenix, if you ever traveled to Phoenix, I know a lot of Canadians do head down to Arizona. Well, today we learned that when you order an Uber at the Phoenix airport, Uber will pick you up just like Vancouver. The only difference is there will be no driver. Yes, they announce autonomous vehicle Ubers for Phoenix Airport. Take a listen to Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego today.
We are the first airport in the world where you can take an autonomous vehicle, and now we'll be the first community in the world where you can hail it with your Uber app. This is the culmination of years of testing. I can tell you, for years, we've stepped outside of City Hall and seen Waymo testing in our community, mapping, getting ready for announcements like the one that we have made today. I have been in a Waymo, and you can see every car on its computer interface, every pedestrian. That's much more than I can see as an individual driver. So I think this is a great win for technology and innovation, but also long-term safer community.
That's a hard pass for me at this moment. I want them to test that out a little bit more. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I'm just wondering if the autonomous vehicle Uber asks for a tip at the end of it. Who knows? But let's catch up with our good friend, Jeremy Cato. He's an automotive journalist at CatoCarGuy.com. I want to talk to him a little bit about EVs today. Jeremy, would you take the autonomous vehicle Uber at the Phoenix airport?
Only if I knew who I could sue when it gets into a crash.
Exactly.
You know, maybe the city of Phoenix has deep pockets. Maybe Waymo does. But I want to know who's responsible. If there's no driver, then I'm going to go after somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a little too soon, kind of like artificial intelligence. But I want to talk to you on the show today about a couple of news stories that sort of I've been looking at over the last week or so. ExxonMobil, which of course is the Texas oil giant, known for drilling for oil, processing oil, selling oil through its mobile gas station chain, announced recently that they have purchased a significant amount of property, 120,000 gross acres, in the Smackover Formation in southern Arkansas. They purchased a company, Galvanic Energy. The price tag was about $100 million, but they're going to be, drilling for lithium. What are your thoughts on all this?
I think that I'd be wary of oil companies buying up anything that could prove to be a potential negative for their own businesses. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Car companies, I mean, have been notorious over the last 100 years of buying up technology and then shelving it in order to keep that from entering the marketplace. So that's my first thought. The second thought is that lithium is one of the many components that goes into batteries that's really important. And the U.S. is way behind on developing its own battery supply chain, behind even Canada, Denmark, and Sweden. So, and certainly way behind China. So this is a development that doesn't surprise me. But there's more questions than answers at this point.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the other things that we also were reading about this week was that the Ford Motor Company has also been signing deals with critical mineral suppliers to essentially, first of all, guarantee a steady supply of some of these critical minerals, particularly lithium. But they say that this will allow them to build up to 2 million electric vehicles by 2026. How important is this type of announcement?
Critical, because, you know, the auto industry is under enormous pressure to really go to all electric vehicle production for new vehicles by somewhere around 2035-ish, depending on your jurisdiction. In these announcements, though, Jazz, I've looked at the same ones that you have. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking for, which I do not see, are the provisions to keep or even make the EV supply chain clean. I mean, the EV supply chain is notoriously ugly and carbon intensive. And if you're just a regular consumer who's going to live anywhere near any of these elements, especially the mines, you got to be wondering, how am I being protected from these kinds of negative elements? So, for example, Indonesia is the largest producer of nickel, which is another key component. Mm-hmm. Well, nickel, Indonesia generates about 20 tons of carbon dioxide per ton of nickel. These are huge amounts. So we need to think about the protections for the average person on the street near the elements of the supply chain, the mines included, of course.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting, I guess there's a two-day event being held in Michigan this week to convince investors that, you know, with these with this lithium deal and many other deals in regards to critical minerals, that Ford says that they're planning for a 16-fold increase in EV production in the span of just a few years. Now, if I'm looking to buy an EV, should I hold off for the next couple of years in regards to just, you know, everybody talks about Tesla and all that, but in regards to wanting choice, in regards to a variety of price points, is it better to wait another year or two before jumping into the EV market at this particular point?
Without question. There's no doubt about it, because you just can't buy an affordable EV yet. I'm this week, as a matter of fact, testing a Kia Niro EV, which is one of the most affordable that you can buy on the market today. And the fully loaded Niro EV that I'm driving, which is just a compact hatchback, very nice little car, but its price is $54,000. Now, it's eligible for about $7,000 minus the excise taxes in incentives, but we're still talking mid-40s to buy a city runabout. So if I were to go looking for a car today, given that fuel prices are high, and I think there's still some lack of clarity in where the whole EV thing is going, I'd look for a hybrid. You can get, you know, 4 liters per 100 kilometers of fuel economy out of a typical Prius or Kia hybrid. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty darn efficient. And you don't have to worry about gas tanks or fill-ups or electrical fill-ups or any, or mines or the lithium supply chain or any of those other things. And you're going to get low emissions with it as well. So you cut your fuel bill in half, cut your emissions by about two-thirds to three-quarters, and let's wait and see until the prices come down.
The next 3 or 4 years, from what I can tell as a layperson, it seems to be there's going to be a lot of challenges but changes as well. If Ford can do what they say in regards to a 16-fold increase in regards to production, if there are a variety of models that are going to be made available, if there's greater clarity in regards to charging stations across this province, this city, this country, we could be at a sort of a tipping point, potentially.
Oh, for sure. I think that the EVs are coming for a whole bunch of reasons, if none other, that the Americans are going to throw about $800 billion, the Biden administration, at various clean energy technologies within the next decade, and that's going to be a great catalyst. But we still don't have a decent charging infrastructure. We still don't have answers to how consumers and apartment dwellers and homeowners are going to be able to afford electric vehicles. And we really don't have any answers around the questions that I asked when I ran for political office last fall, Jazz, which is, why don't we spend more money on transit? You know, if we had high-speed rail connections between, for example, Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal, that would cost around $12 billion. And you take a ton of cars and planes off the roads and out of the skies. And that $12 billion is about $2 billion less than taxpayers in Ontario and across Canada are spending to subsidize a battery plant in Ontario. Maybe we need to rethink those elements as well if we really want to reduce emissions.
Jeremy, thanks for your time today.
Okay. I hope that was the answer you wanted.
That was. Well, I'd say there's a lot of questions, so I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.